This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On November 5th, a peaceful Sunday morning, church service became a scene of a targeted mass shooting. The small town of Sutherland Springs, about 30 miles east of San Antonio, was now on the list of terrible modern-day massacres. Places like Columbine, Newtown, Charleston, Orlando Pulse, Las Vegas, add to that list Sutherland Springs. Considered the largest mass shooting in Texas history, the tragedy in Sutherland Springs continues to shock the senses across the nation and here at home in San Antonio. On this special edition of The Source, we're going to recap the coverage of the shooting and the vigils, but more importantly, we're going to look at how this is impacting our community. Have you been shaken? Have you shed tears? Then you are dealing with trauma and distress. Yes, others have lost more. There are people who have lost friends and family. But in the aftermath of a mass shooting like this, we're all friends and family, and we have all lost. How can community members and fellow Americans manage the grief, anger, shock, and fear caused by such a devastating event? We encourage you to call in, talk about how you feel after this shooting in Sutherland Springs. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Our guest for the first half hour, we're joined by Mary Beth Fisk. She is the CEO and Executive Director of the Ecumenical Center. And Mary Beth, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Joey Palacios. He's a reporter for Texas Public Radio, and he has been part of our team, boots on the ground in Sutherland Springs, covering much of what's happening. And Joey, welcome.
Thanks, Dave.
So, Joey, let's start off. I'm going to hear one of your initial reports. It kind of tells the story of what happened out there.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott called this the largest mass shooting in Texas history.
And this will be a long-suffering mourning for those in pain.
Around 11:20 a.m., the shooter entered the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs in the middle of service with an assault-style weapon and opened fire. Officials with the Texas Department of Public Safety say the suspect is a man in his 20s and was seen wearing tactical gear at a gas station across the street before the shooting. When he left the church, a resident with a rifle engaged the suspect. The suspect was found dead in his vehicle. The victims range in age from 5 to 72 years old. Sutherland Springs is about 40 miles southeast of San Antonio.
So, Joey Palacios, when this thing first happened, mm-hmm. we heard that there was some kind of shooting in Sutherland Springs, and you and I were talking back and forth on Facebook right. and saying, should I go, you go, and I decided I'm going to go, and I went right. out there. But then you came here, and you helped our coverage, and then you've been out there for many, many days talking to people. Have you felt something here?
Like, personally?
Yeah.
I think it took maybe about 2 or 3 days before it started to really hit me on a human level than a reporter level. Covering these stories it's just tragic. There's just no way to really go out there and do this story without feeling what everyone else is feeling. Like, I'm a lifelong San Antonian, and the fact that this has happened so close to here, to our neighbors, to a city that's less than 40 miles away from here, it's very shocking. And a lot of people just in San Antonio that I've spoken to just, you know, are feeling the same way, that it's very rattling that it's happened here in our own backyard. From people that I've talked to in Sutherland Springs, the first day that I went down there, which was Monday, the day after that you were there, Dave, there were people outside of the gas station just finding out, you know, some of the names of people that were in the church, but they didn't know if they were alive or dead. And there was one gentleman that I spoke to, a guy by the name of Jim Crossley. He had found out not too long before that his friend Joanne Ward was in there with several of her children, and he had found out maybe about 3 or 4 hours prior that she and her two of her children had died in there. And you know, as I was talking to him, he became very emotional, and he just said that he had to stop talking, which is understandable. And you know, it's one of those it's a human moment where, you know, I just put my equipment down and I hugged him, because, you know, these people are still in a state of shock And we're at a greater state of shock back then. So, you know, there comes a point where you have to stop being the reporter for a moment and just being like another supportive human being.
I was at the community center, and people were crying. And I didn't want to take any pictures. I didn't want to take any audio. Just had to leave them alone. We shouldn't have been there. And we left eventually. Wow. We were given another place to go, but it was tough. And so we know this is a community event. We want to share it and talk about it as a community event. Let's bring in Mary Beth Fisk, the CEO, Executive Director of the Ecumenical Center. And how do you think this impacts the entire city?
Oh, this impacts everyone across the city, certainly the victims and their families, the church family from that area. But I think it affects people across our country and around the world, that feeling of not being able to be safe in a place that you visit every single week where you worship is so very difficult. And it triggers so many that have had traumas in their past, back to those moments of great sorrow and challenge.
And you have been in Sutherland Springs. You have been working out of a neighboring church, River Oaks Baptist Church. And are people coming to you? Do they recognize, I need to talk to somebody? I know they have a lot of your leaflets at the church. I was there. I spent Sunday there.
Absolutely. We've been there. I personally have been there since the afternoon of Sunday when the tragedy occurred in, as you say, the community center, where we had Governor Abbott come that night. Those people that were there at that point were wondering if their loved ones were okay. They didn't know if they'd been transported to the hospital. They didn't know if they were amongst the casualties. And an evening that you just don't forget.
And these people have faith. A lot of these people, this is a faith-rich community. How important is it that people have that in this circumstance?
You know, faith in the eyes of such major tragedy and loss of life is so imperative to recovery. The Ecumenical Center, for which I represent, we have faith-based counseling. It's available and have been providing that since Sunday evening to those who've been affected, to the families, to the victims, to the community at large, to our caregivers, because we can't forget those who've been serving. They've also been a part of this tragedy, as well as those listening to the reports, those in the community who have, as you said in the start of the show, been shedding tears of sorrow. It's important that we talk about it. It's important that everyone have an outlet. Some individuals may feel overwhelmed or have sudden changes in emotion. Others may function well during the disaster, but experience its impact at a later time. Some people respond to deep feelings while others show no effects at all. There's really no right way to respond to a disaster of this type.
Right. And so this afternoon, we're asking people if you want to talk about how this has impacted you. What are your feelings? Speaking about it helps. Hearing about it helps. Crying about it helps. But everyone in our community, everyone within our listening range has been impacted by this story. And we want to help you get through this. The number to call in, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues when we come back from the break.
Everyone's like shattered because just this whole town's kind of closed, and the church had a lot of memories for a lot of people. And I think a lot of them are going to stop going because this church has lost so many members over the past few years.
And that was 16-year-old Amber Main, a resident of Sutherland Springs, talking about how she expected the community to deal with the tragedy and the loss of life at the mass shooting at the First Baptist Church there. We're talking about how people are reacting, how you are reacting to the word of this shooting. Maybe, you know, you've never been there. Maybe you've driven by there every once in a while. Maybe you've never heard of Sutherland Springs before this tragedy. But because a lot of people, this is being reported so heavily locally, this is part of our community here in San Antonio, just outside of San Antonio, about 30 miles. We feel definitely a connection to that community, and there's been a lot of money raised and a lot of activity to help these people, and that is a great way to respond to how you're feeling, find out some actionable ways to help relieve other people's suffering. We've seen a lot of that outreach, but also talking about it and hearing about it, that's another way, and we're doing that this afternoon. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980, and I'm going to get a caller on right now, and this is Emma. And Emma, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that I also live in the San Antonio area, and seeing every story about mothers that are, protecting their children during the shooting, it's very sad, and it's scary. I mean, they were innocent lives, and it was just sad. It was scary.
Emma, thank you for calling in. You're so right. So, Mary Beth Fisk, you're the CEO, Executive Director of the Ecumenical Center, and you're in the area helping people who have been directly impacted by this tragedy work through their feelings and their grief. But for someone like Emma, she's talking about, she can relate because she's a, mothers. Sure. Mothers know.
Sure. Absolutely.
Primal.
Absolutely. And there were valiant efforts by those who were in the church to protect their children. The tragedy was so significant. But for folks like Emma, I would say, make sure you continue to talk about what happened. Talk about how you're feeling. That's very important to your own self-care. Allow yourself to cry. Tears can release toxins. It can help you to reach a healthier place. And also, don't forget to exercise and to move. Do what calms you and what relaxes you. That's different for every single person. And gradually return to some of your routine, usual activities. And don't stay by yourself right in the beginning. If you feel vulnerable, be with others and accept help from others. Notice positives and don't blame. And so often that's what we do in a tragic situation. But if those feelings get away from you and you feel that you're in a place of despair, reach out for help. You can come to a place like the Ecumenical Center that provides counseling. So call for more information.
So Joey Palacios, you've been the reporter out there, and I've been out there quite a bit too. And there you see a lot of people showing up. They drive in from San Antonio. Some people drive up from Houston. Some people I met drove up from the Valley. Mm-hmm. They heard about this, and they wanted to come and see what it looked like for themselves. And other people were kind of critical of them for doing that, mm-hmm. but is saying, what are these people doing here? This is not their community. But still, I mean, did you see that too? And these people were really touched by it, and they wanted to have that personal connection, that first-hand experience of seeing what it was like. Do you think that's another way of working through this?
There were a few people that I had run into that had come to the intersection of the highway where the church is. There's some from that came from San Antonio. Like you mentioned, another one came from Houston, and they just drove out there to place flowers outside of as close as they could get to the church.
There's a memorial there now. It's just covered in flowers.
Right. And there's two. There's the big one, the one that has the 26 crosses, and then there's one over towards more the center of town. Mm-hmm. I forget the highway names. I think it's 87 and 539. But there were three like large woven crosses made out of sticks that were placed there, and there were flowers and there were teddy bears across the street from there. There was, I cannot remember their names, but there was a group from Corpus Christi that had come down, and they just had teddy bears there for people just to take, if somebody needed like a stuffed animal, just to take with them. So there were plenty of people who were coming from afar to just stop by and pay their respects, to hug people that were there, just to right. just spend time with the folks.
So Mary Beth Fisk at the Ecumenical Center, do you think that if someone feels compelled to make that drive out to Sutherland Springs and go to that memorial themselves, should they go?
They certainly can go. It's open now. As Joey said, there's places that you can leave flowers or
is that
or
beneficial
teddy bears.
To someone to do that? Some people,
it's really beneficial to try to help. Some people have been providing food. We've had businesses that have brought food and drinks in for the families and the victims who've gathered uh-huh. in the Family Coordinating Center. And that's been extremely helpful, not only for those families, but for those volunteers that are there on that campus and serving them.
Okay, I'm going to hear, listen, play another clip. This is Sheriff Joe Tackett from this talking about the scene in the church that day.
Everyone had blood on them, so it was hard to tell, you know, at the beginning. But there were some people that came out uninjured.
Tackett personally knew one of the families who he describes as good Christians and says the scene will stay with him.
When I walked in, I saw a lot of bodies laying around. You know, some mothers were trying to cover their children. They were, you know, it's just bad.
And that was Paul Flav, our reporter, working on that story. And in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar talking about how he was impacted and how he's helping his deputies cope with this tragedy. But right now, I want to bring in another one of our reporters, and this is Carson Frame. She's our military reporter here at Texas Public Radio. And so she has the expertise to look into some very confusing things about what happened with the gunman. And how his involvement with the military and how he got out of the military. And so, Carson, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here.
Thanks.
What do we know about the gunman, Devin Patrick Kelly's exodus from the Air Force?
Essentially, he was court-martialed in 2012 for charges of assault on his first wife and his child. And that earned him a bad conduct discharge, 12 months of military confinement, and a reduction in his rank. And then he was supposed to serve a year at the Naval Consolidated Brig in San Diego, California.
So a bad conduct discharge, that is different than a dishonorable discharge?
It is, yes. Both of those they're punitive discharges, which means that they, you know, once you're deemed dishonorable or bad conduct, you lose access to VA benefits and VA health benefits.
Is one worse than the other?
Dishonorable is sort of the worst on that spectrum, but bad conduct is also, you know, it's obviously not a positive thing. And you know, both of those, bad conduct and dishonorable, you get when you've been convicted by a special or general court-martial for a pretty serious offense.
And what was his offense?
His was, it was assault, domestic violence and assault.
He was convicted of choking his wife. I think he pled guilty of hitting, choking his wife, and also hitting a child and fracturing that child's skull.
That's right, yeah.
So he was, when you say he was in for a year of confinement, I never know with military terms, so I'm going to ask you some very basic questions. That means like he was in jail?
Yes. It's a
basically
it's
prison.
Yes, it's a regional correctional facility where he was.
And so that meant that he should not have been able to get a firearm. We now know that, right?
I mean, right. The status of his crime should have been reported to a federal database called the NICS database, and it wasn't. So that database is part of the background check system that we have in this country, and the Air Force failed to report Kelly's crime to that database.
And so when he was released from prison, is there any kind of follow-up that goes on? I know typically when you're released from prison in the civil, there's a difference. We have civilian justice and military justice. They're totally different types of way of doing this. And in the civilian justice, we typically have probation where you have follow-up care or people checking up on you. Is that something that Devin Patrick Kelly had to deal with when he left the military?
I do not believe so. I mean, essentially when you are discharged from the military, you've served your term of confinement. They do not have any more jurisdiction over you. I believe that was the case with him.
And it also meant since he had a bad conduct discharge, he was not eligible for VA benefits. So he could not have gotten any sort of like maybe mental health help.
Right.
Although there's plenty of evidence showing that he had mental health conditions were a pre-existing condition for this guy.
Right. I mean, with a bad conduct discharge, you lose all of your VA mental health benefits, and essentially you can go to the VA in a crisis situation, and you know if you're at risk of harming yourself or others, but that's called humanitarian service, and essentially, you know, you have to pay the VA back for that service. They only treat you in the immediate sense, and it's not an ongoing mental health treatment at all.
Right. So this whole situation with Devin Patrick Kelly has brought to the national spotlight that there is this problem with the intersection between military justice and civilian justice. And so we're seeing that there needs to be greater communication between the two, that they both occupy roles in the same world. And now we need to realize that it's going to impact all of us if this is not done well. Is that a good analysis?
Right. I mean, right now there's really, you know, not much apparent interplay between federal courts and military courts, or, you know, much of a handoff between them, especially in cases of violent offenders. And there's a lot of confusion about the, you know, military terminology as well. Last year, Congress passed an act which actually, you know, tried to adapt the military justice system to be more like federal courts.
Okay, we have a caller who has a question about that, and this is Yvette. And Yvette, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. I was just wondering if she had heard anything about what I recently read from an article from USA Today mentioning that there were now going to be waivers allowing certain mental disorders to be allowed for the military. I believe it was the Army, like bipolar disorders, alcoholism, and things like that.
Yvette, thank you for that great question. Appreciate it. So Carson Frame?
Yeah, I have. I did come across that article as well, and I'm kind of in discussion with Army recruiting about that. Essentially, it was reported that, yes, like you're saying, Army is accepting these waivers for mental health conditions for people going into the service. However, I'm getting feedback from the Army side that, you know, there's not really been a significant change there, that the body that sort of judges these waivers has changed, but the actual conditions for entering the service have not. So I'm actually looking into that as we speak. So thanks for that question.
So last December, Congress passed the Military Justice Act of 2016. President Obama signed it, and this was said to be a way to adapt the military system to be more like the federal court system. Has that taken effect?
I mean, it's. I haven't, you know, I honestly don't know enough about what that was supposed to look like in terms. I think it, you know, made some of the language more similar. It required, military judges to serve a particular amount of time in service, in active service. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
Right. And there were some questions about transparency in the military judicial system. So we had seen some cases in the past where there was a lot of sexual assaults on female, particularly recruits here, and that that those people had gone through the military justice system and didn't really get sentences or convictions, that many people wondered what was that about.
Yeah, I mean, it's the military justice system is not really like a precedent-based system. So there's no rule book that necessarily says, okay, this particular crime merits this particular punishment. There's a lot of gray area in there. And so, for example, one gentleman I spoke to said to me that he was a former judge advocate, and he said to me, I've seen guys with DUIs get honorable discharges, and I've seen them get, you know.
And not.
Right.
And okay. All right. So we're going to take a break. And Carson Frame, thank you for your expertise in helping us better understand the circumstances that led to Devin Patrick Kelly's release from the military. And we're going to continue our discussion. We're going to hear from Sheriff Salazar. We come back from the break. And also, we got a lot of callers here. We're going to continue talking about the emotional weight that we're all carrying after seeing what happened in Sutherland Springs. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today's topic, the emotional weight of Sutherland Springs. How has this impacted you, others around you? You may have not lost friends or family directly. Yeah, there are people who have lost a lot, but just because you haven't doesn't mean you haven't been impacted by this, and we want to hear from you. We're going to try and work through some of our feelings about that in the remaining of our hour. And I want to talk to Sheriff Javier Salazar and our Bexar County Sheriff. And he, Sheriff Salazar, it's great to have you. You there?
Great to be here. Yes, sir.
So I remember I saw you Sunday, the one it happened. You were there, and I could just tell by your facial expression that yes, this was bad. Like, you look serious.
Yes, sir. It was a serious scenario, and unfortunately, it was something we had been preparing, at least to the extent that we thought we could. Interestingly enough, the Friday prior to that incident, We actually called a meeting here for area sheriffs here in Bexar County. We all met at Michiera Restaurant, and I think we had about 15 different sheriff's offices from the area all the way down to the border represented, just to get on the same page about things. You know, of course, one of the things I talked to them is I extended my any resources we have, because I know that a lot of the smaller counties are going to be somewhat limited on resources, personnel, and training. Told them about some of the capabilities we have here and made that available to them. Now, Sheriff Tackett was one of those that came, maybe it's a little fortuitous that during that luncheon, I actually told them, look, we need to be meeting under circumstances like this. The middle of an active shooter situation is not the first time two sheriffs need to be meeting face-to-face. And little did Sheriff Tackett or I know that 48 hours later, he and I would be working together with respect to this scene, and it was quite a heartbreaking scene. It was a bit chaotic at times. Certainly a dynamic experience for everybody involved.
How are you taking care of yourself? I mean, you were there. You saw the terribleness of it.
Well, from a first responder's standpoint, you know, I've been in this business for 25 years, and you think you've seen it all,
yeah.
And you think that nothing can shock you anymore, and then something like this happens, and you remember that, yeah, there's a certain part of it that needs to be compartmentalized. As first responders, we have to be able to put that aside in the heat of the moment for certain, but then it does come back to you in times when you're holding your own kids, in times when you're sleeping in the middle of a dream, it'll come back to you. And so certainly it's something that we do have to continue to work with. You know, not only was I out there, I had dozens of deputies, boots on the ground out there, also back here in town dealing with the aftermath, interviewing some of the survivors that were here at the hospitals, our level one trauma centers here in San Antonio. I actually had deputies, investigators out there interviewing them. And so, yeah, it's something that we've got to monitor our own personnel to make sure that we are dealing with it in a healthy way.
Certainly we need to celebrate the first responders because the quick action, the professionalism, the high quality of training, all the resources that y'all had, we were able to keep the loss of life down once people were able to access health care and EMS and be stabilized. That mm-hmm. means that the death toll did not continue to rise.
Oh, it's certainly a testament to modern medicine and to the first responders that, I mean, got out there and just flat out got the job done. They picked up the wounded and got them, you know, to the best sources of health care locally here, to our Bexar County hospitals. I know University Hospital had a bunch, SAMC had a bunch, and then, of course, Christa Santa Rosa had some as well. So, yeah, my hat is definitely off not only to those first responders but to the emergency room folks that, I mean, they're the best in the business.
Was there ever a particular moment or an exchange or anything that happened to you that you just couldn't really hold it together anymore? And I mean, you're the sheriff and you're the rock for many of us here in Bexar County, but you're also, I mean, you're a guy and you're a man and we've all seen things, but this is beyond anything I've ever experienced before. And I've seen some terrible stuff too. And there were times, I went to the service at the River Oaks Baptist Church right in Sutherland Springs on Sunday, and I couldn't hold it together anymore. And so have you had moments like that? Because you need to.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, it upsets you. But at the same time, I'm not able to just, break down and say, well, this happened. It's a horrible thing. I mean, yes, it is. But the first thing that I did was we got on a plan and started, we need to make sure that this is not allowed to happen, certainly here in Bexar County. So I got with my chief over community readiness. We have a community readiness division that is what we do. We prepare our community for events like this. And actually, Harry Jimenez is my deputy chief over that. He's a former Homeland Security Investigations agent. That's what he does. He trains the general public on how best to respond to situations like this. Harry actually met me out at the scene that day, as did several other members of my command staff, and we started preparing. We knew that, we had already been doing this training probably two to three times a week with different churches and schools. Prior to this, since we started office in January, we knew that that demand was going to rise exponentially, and it has, and we've risen to the occasion for sure. Certainly anybody that's out there that's interested in getting this sort of training, how to prevent this, how to address it here in Bexar County, or even surrounding counties can call us. I'll give you the number. It's 210-335-6169, 210-335-6169. You can give us a call here at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office, and we will help you out with being prepared. Now, there may not always be a way to prevent this sort of thing. I mean, that's certainly a bigger issue, but it's in being prepared and how to deal with it as a congregation or as a school or as a place of business.
All right, Sheriff Javier Salazar, Bexar County Sheriff, thank you so much. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Let's take a caller. I've got a lot of calls here on the board, and the number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation. And this is Lorena. Lorena, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. I would just like to say that there's been a lot of focus on the words faith community, and there are many of us who are not members of a specific faith community. I myself was educated through graduate school at Catholic institutions, and I raised my family, and I'm expecting my 10th and 11th grandchildren in February, and I'm very family-oriented, but those of us who don't belong to specific faith communities still have great compassion for those who are suffering in the, you know, the church in Sutherland Springs, the Baptist Church. And I think sometimes the fact that we don't identify with one particular faith community allows us to be more encompassing for everyone out there who has suffered this kind of a tragedy, regardless of where it occurs. And that's all I wanted to say.
Well, Lorena, thank you for saying that. So let me turn to Mary Beth Fisk, CEO, Executive Director of the Ecumenical Center. So there are some people who don't identify with the church. There are maybe even some people who don't have a strong faith in a divine, but still there are people that feel very strongly about humanity and trying to, people shouldn't suffer needlessly. How do you reach out to those people?
Absolutely. It's important to meet the needs of everyone. And one of the things within the scope of the counseling offered at the Ecumenical Center is that we follow the client wherever they are, whatever their needs are. It's not necessarily, faith does not necessarily have to be a part of that conversation. We have licensed professional counselors, psychologists on board that do all of this type of work. So anyone who's experiencing concerns, please contact the Ecumenical Center at 210-616-0885. Again, it's 210-616-0885. And we can connect you with a counselor that can walk through those feelings with you. Important to talk about it for children, especially helping our kids. You're going to see a reaction. It might look something like this. There's sleeplessness. There's some acting out that you often see, especially with kids. Stomach aches, headaches, irritability, difficulty concentrating, higher level of activity, kind of that hypersensitization, separation anxiety, and also developmental regression in some cases. That may be signs and symptoms that they're experiencing grief and loss. Whether they're a part of this community or not, they're still grieving, and grieving manifests itself in so many different ways. And we need to be watching for that and attentive to that to provide help.
And so people who are not connected to a direct church or even a direct faith, they may feel like and they're still grieving, but they're reluctant to reach out to the Ecumenical Center because they're afraid maybe they're going to try to be converted or maybe exercise you or something. That doesn't happen. You just take them as is, and you look at it, try it through their eyes.
Absolutely. We open our doors to everyone, and we have 12 locations around the San Antonio and surrounding areas currently. We serve 25,000 individuals, half of those being children, every single year. There is no bias. They can come and visit with a counselor without any type of conversation about faith if that's what they so desire.
Okay, so here's another clip. This is our reporter, Ryan Poppy. He's talking to a shooting survivor, Roseanne Solis.
Her husband, Joaquin Ramirez, was hit by shrapnel. As they left University Hospital Monday night, Solis described the scene at First Baptist Church as chaotic and the shooter as unrelenting.
Everybody started screaming, yelling. Everybody got down, crawling under, wherever they could hide. It was so scary, and that man was shooting. He was shooting hard.
Solis told KSAT News in San Antonio that they survived by hiding under pews and playing dead. She says she's lucky to be already going home.
And we're going to take a break. The number to call in, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We've got some calls on the board, but we can take more. We really want to hear how this is impacting you and how you are reaching out, getting some help, because we've all been impacted by this shooting. The Source continues after this break.
The stands were full. At least 2,000 people came to pay their respects. Many from Wilson County, others from San Antonio. Some lifted their hands in prayer and hugged one another. Carla Sycama is from Floresville.
We're a small community first, but the most important thing is we're family. We're family. You know, you can't even go to our local grocery store right now because an employee there is no longer there. We lost someone there. So it's affected our community throughout.
And we heard from that individual who's being interviewed about how they're being impacted simply because they know there are people who are part of their community who are no longer there. And we're talking about the impact this has on us as a community here in San Antonio, our listening community here on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source. Let's go to a caller. This is Daniel. And Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. In the beginning of this segment, I just wanted to comment there was, David, yourself, a sense of vulnerability and humility that was shown in the media that, you shared on the radio. And I wanted to make the comment that I feel like there's not enough of that in the national media or local media, even some of our leaders. Things like this have happened. It becomes very bureaucratic very quickly. And I feel it sort of devalues the severity and the sensitivity of the situation. And I just wanted to, applaud you for, it takes courage to, kind of share some of those vulnerabilities, but I feel that more of that courage needs to be exposed in some of the other mainstream media outlets to sort of allow people to kind of feel it's okay to have these emotions. It's okay to feel, sad and burdened. I want to make that comment. I thought it was very touching, and it definitely got to me right away. So. Thank you.
Well, Daniel, thank you for the call, and thank you for those comments. And Joey, you went to, like we just heard your clip, you went to many vigils. And we saw this, Vice President Pence and Governor Abbott and other people coming. When we have these people of this stature in our society showing up and grieving along with other individuals, does this help validate people's feelings, how important it is to recognize, yes, this is a terrible thing, and we need to come together at least to celebrate each other's, the presence of each other as we move forward.
In the sense of, having high-profile figures there, I feel like that having the vice president at Floresville High School when he was speaking there created, I think, a bit of a larger sense of unity among some of the people there, more so than the vice president, but the sense of faith, because everybody that came up to speak, the governor, Ted Cruz, the vice president, were all talking about faith in God. And for these small communities, Floresville, Lavernia, Sutherland Springs, Seguin, these are very faith-based communities. Practically everybody that I had talked to said that they were putting their faith in God, that God would make things right. And that's the feeling that you get among people there, is that they are entrusting what will happen or what how they believe that they should move forward to a higher power.
And using that as a way to work through tragedy, Mary Beth Fisk, some people will sometimes sour on faith, you say, why does God let these things happen? But then we have faith leaders to try to guide you a different way.
Absolutely. And if you're of a faith, God never said it was going to be easy. He endured great hardships himself as an example for us. But we do see that anger comes about. Anger's real part. It's a real part of grief. And being able to work through those feelings is important. If it's close to home, working through those feelings with a licensed professional can be very helpful. Over the course of the last several days, we've combined a pastoral counselor along with a licensed professional counselor in working with these families, the victims, and those that are close to them, as well as the community at large, because, like as you said earlier in the program, it's not just someone that you're related to that you may be grieving, but you may be grieving the loss of so many and the loss of sense of security in a place that should be very, very safe.
Here is Pastor Frank Pomeroy. He was the head of the First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs at the service on Sunday.
But I would submit to you this morning that this past weekend, our country was attacked. Our state was attacked. Our church was attacked. Glory to God, our people were attacked.
All right.
I know everyone who gave their life that day, some of which were my best friends. My daughter. And I guarantee you, beyond any shadow of a doubt, they are dancing with Jesus today.
Here is another caller. This is David. And David, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I guess, express that it's so incredibly frustrating that there's nobody that we can hold accountable for what happened. You know, the gunman's dead. You know, it's not like we can sue the Air Force for that lapse of process. And, you know, the legislature's not going to do anything about gun laws or anything like that. It's so frustrating.
David, thank you for the call. What do you do with that frustration? And that's a real thing. That's validated. I understand how David feels. Mary Beth Fisk?
Absolutely. The frustration, looking at the circumstances as we continue to learn facts about the case, things that we didn't know before that become part of the background before this tragic event took place, it's often that we try to look to find blame somewhere. And it's difficult because we're angry, and it just should never have happened. The system, whatever, should not have allowed this. But those are normal feelings. Those are the feelings that we have, that frustration. And so we would encourage you, from your own mental health and wellness component, to be able to share with others, to voice your concerns. There's ways in which you can do that. If you'd like to contact your legislator, please feel free. Contact them with your concerns. That certainly may give you kind of an opportunity to act on some of those frustrations as well. But we would say, for your own well-being, make sure that you are using that in a constructive way.
Another caller. This is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm very saddened by this tragedy, but I'm also angry because I feel that people are looking at the individual that chased after the perpetrator as a hero. He endangered private citizens' lives. He took the law into his own hands. And he is being lauded as a hero. I do not feel that he was a hero, and I do not feel he was trained. I think he should have left this to the law enforcement individuals, and I'm very angry and upset about it.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you for that call. He doesn't call himself a hero, right, Joey?
Yeah, he has actually been avoiding the media as much as he could. He was at the vigil on Wednesday night with the vice president, sitting with some of the family members a bit away from the vice president and the other speakers. The vice president was leaving, he actually walked up to, and I think I'm going to mess up his name, I think it was Steve Whitaker, if I'm not mistaken, but the vice president went in and shook his hand and shook the hand of Johnny Langendorf, who was the driver. He is receiving praise from at least the federal government.
Well, from people. There are people who were at the church, and others do celebrate him. And he was a trained certified gun trainer. And so, Mary Beth, last words for you.
Yes, our hearts and prayers go out to the many families, friends, and our community, large and small, that are dealing with the tragedy of last Sunday. We pray for the comfort for this community, for our country, and especially those families that have lost so very much. If you need assistance, please contact the Ecumenical Center at 210-616-0885 to speak with a licensed professional counselor. We will have new offices opening in Sutherland Springs and in Wilson County. We'll provide mental health counseling to that community, not only this week, next month, but in the many years to come.
And you're also working with schools?
We're working with the public schools and have had presence in there with our counselors to assist the children and their families as well as the faculty members.
I want to thank you, Mary Beth Fisk, CEO of the Ecumenical Center, Joy Palacios, reporter. We're going to close out by hearing the names of the victims, people who have fallen in Sutherland Springs.
Robert Marshall, 56. Karen Marshall, 56. Keith Braden, 62. Tara McNulty, 33. Annabelle Pomeroy, 14. Peggy Warden, 56. Dennis Johnson, Sr., 77. Sarah Johnson, 68. Lula White, 71. Joanne Ward, 30. Brooke Ward, 5. Robert Corrigan, 51. Shaney Corrigan, 51. Therese Rodriguez, 66. Ricardo Rodriguez, 64. Haley Kruger, 16. Emily Garcia, 7. Emily Hill, 11. Gregory Hill, 13. Megan Hill, 9. Mark Holcomb, 36. Noah Holcomb, 1. Kara Holcomb, 58. John Holcomb, 60. Crystal Holcomb, 36, and her unborn baby.